This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, July 26th. I'm Angela Denning. Today is the first day to file for office for the October municipal election in Petersburg. There are 19 elected positions to fill on various committees and boards. The Borough Assembly will have three open seats. One is the three-year seat of Mayor Mark Jensen. The others are for Assembly members Kurt Wohlhuter and J. Stanton Greger, each with three-year terms. The school board has two open seats, both three-year terms. There are four hospital board seats to fill. Three seats are for three-year terms, and one is a two-year term. The Planning Commission has three open seats, two three-year terms, and one one-year term. Voters will be electing two positions for the Library Board, both for three-year terms. There are two seats open on the Harbor Board, three-year terms, and the Public Safety Board has three open seats to fill, two three-year terms and one that is a two-year term. Public officials' financial disclosure reporting will not be required because voters opted out of that requirement in last year's election. Nominating petitions and declaration of candidacy forms can be picked up at the Finance Office or online at the Borough's website. The last day to file for candidacy is August 23rd at 5 p.m. The annual municipal election will be held on Tuesday, October 4th. The last day to qualify and register to vote for that election is September the 4th. People can get voter registration forms at the borough offices. A body found floating in the Tongass Narrows over the weekend has not yet been identified, but as Alaska State Troopers report, the man does not appear to be one of two men reported missing in Ketchikan. Megan Peters says Alaska State Troopers received a phone call Saturday evening reporting a body in the water off North Tongass Highway.
We did respond and located an unidentified adult male, but they weren't able to positively ID the person at that point in time.
The body was sent to the state medical examiner's office in Anchorage for an autopsy. Troopers hope to establish the man's identity through that process. Peter says the amount of time it takes to positively identify a body depends on what information is available. In this case,
the troopers told me that they think they might know who the individual might be, so they sent that information to the state medical examiner's office. And if that information is accurate, and they have the ability to do either dental comparisons or fingerprinting to do the match, they could do that very quickly. But if those things aren't available, sometimes it takes longer to do that.
Peter says it does not appear that the body is connected to two open missing person cases in Ketchikan. The two missing men are 69-year-old Gary Hamilton, last seen in late November, and 38-year-old Roy Banhart, who was last seen the morning of December 30th of 2014. Earlier this month, the U.S. Forest Service celebrated the 50th anniversary of the National Historic Preservation Act, with a picnic celebration at the Three Lakes Shelter near Petersburg. Abby Collins made the trip out the road to see science, history, and community come together in the woods.
You can get to the Three Lakes Shelter in as many ways, by the Crane Hill or Sand Lake trails. When I get to Sand Lake, the road in front of the trailhead is packed with cars. It's Friday and a big turnout for the middle of a work day. Walking the Sand Lake Trail to the shelter, it's fitting to be hiking on the boardwalk carefully constructed by Forest Service crews to improve the trail. I wore the wrong shoes for a hike. Canvas flats with little traction, but on a dry day, it's no problem on the boards. Members of the Petersburg community are out here today celebrating the 50th anniversary of the National Historic Preservation Act. It also feels like a celebration of the Forest Service's role in recreation around Petersburg.
Holy boy, I saw a fish! It was swimming!
You saw a fish?
Yeah, I got it.
Kids are running around, collecting water to examine close up. Some, like Art, are carrying around big nets, trying to catch dragonflies.
Damsel, what are you trying to catch?
Dragonflies and damselflies. My brother's going to do it when he's done eating his hot dog.
There's a dragonfly right there.
What do you think's in there?
I think there's, like, sea stuff. Oh, gosh. Whoa.
That's Freya. She spills some of that mucky lake water on her while loading a sort of water viewfinder. The Three Lakes Shelter was built in 1938 by the Civilian Conservation Corps, an organization born out of President Roosevelt's New Deal. Even back then, the structure was used for recreation. It also helped provide access to isolated spots. In 2006, the Petersburg Ranger District did a historic restoration of the building, fixing it up but keeping a lot of the original parts. It's a warm day, though not as sunny as the forecast said it would be. A few drizzles of rain here and there, the wild blueberries are ripe, and the activities are not just for kids. A group of adults cores a tree with botanist Joni Johnson.
We're coring a tree.
It's a way of determining the tree's age without cutting it down. They're inserting a small, rounded instrument into the trunk. It's a tall tree, but the trunk is not very wide.
You slide it in upside down. Yep, and it goes into the tube. Yep. And then right here, if you would just hold on to it here so you don't bend it and slide it in. And all the way in as far as you can. Okay. And then go ahead and back it off just 180 degrees.
Back it out.
Yeah.
Do you have a guess how old it is?
What do you think for this shore pine?
125 years old.
They're pretty old. Yeah.
They grow really slow.
Yeah. I mean, and it does it. It's not competing with sunlight that much, and it's kind of a slightly higher site than over yonder.
They remove the tool and the core and count the rings. It turns out to be around 60 years old, plus or minus 10 years, they estimate.
Yay, success!
Yay!
The Three Lakes Shelter sits just off of Shelter Lake. Today, the three-sided Adirondack-style shelter is mostly being used to hold food. Outside, visitors roast hot dogs over the fire pit. Down by the lake, the Forest Service's Linda Slatt is on dragonfly duty.
We're showing them to the kids how to handle them safely, how to identify them.
What sorts of dragonflies are around here?
Let's see, I caught a lake darner, which is one of the biggest ones. And then there's quite a few of the damselflies, which are much, much smaller, easier to catch.
Amid the fun activities, the Forest Service unveiled a historic property plaque at the shelter, marking its place in the Tongass's past and asking the community to help preserve it for the future. In Petersburg, I'm Abby Collins.
A Haines tribe is calling a recent U.S. Court of Appeals decision. Start over here. A Haines tribe is calling a recent U.S. Court of Appeals decision a historic victory. The Chilkoot Indian Association was among five plaintiffs in a lawsuit challenging what is known as the Alaska Exception, which prohibited Alaska tribes from placing their lands into federal trust. After years of litigation, including an appeal from the state, the federal court sided with the tribes. As Emily Files reports from Haines, Alaska tribes can now petition for sovereignty over their lands.
It's a historic decision, and our name is on that lawsuit, and that means a lot, and I think that our people should be very proud of that fact.
Harriet Brulette is the tribal administrator for the Chilkoot Indian Association. She says the tribe got involved in the case because there was inequality between the rights of tribes in Alaska and the rest of the United States.
We weren't being treated equally, so this is the Chilkoot Indian Association played a historical part in making sure that all tribes are created equally.
In the 1930s, the Indian Reorganization Act was put into place, which allowed the U.S. Secretary of the Interior to acquire trust lands. Placing land into trust gives it permanent protection for a tribe's exclusive use. Reservations are an example of this. But the 49th state was excluded from that right because of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, which distributed land to Alaska Native people and created Native corporations. About 10 years ago, Akiachak, Tulisak, Chalkeetsik, the Chilkoot Indian Association, and a Barrow individual filed suit. They said the Alaska exception violated the Indian Reorganization Act's anti-discrimination provision by treating Native tribes differently. The district court agreed and struck down the Alaska exception, but the process was put in limbo by an appeal from the state of Alaska. Governor Bill Walker took an unprecedented step and visited the tribes involved in the suit last year while he tried to decide whether his administration should continue that appeal. Here he is last August.
I'm a big believer in, I like decisions made as close to home as possible. Decisions being made in Washington, D.C. about land use in Alaska. Right now, 62% of our land is in federal control, so adding to that, I'm concerned about that.
Walker ended up continuing the appeal, but early this month, the court dismissed it.
What this will do is give us some sovereign authority over our own land so that we can make decisions just like any other tribe in the lower 48 does about how we use our land. And we, like any other sovereign nation, we won't have to ask permission from anybody but ourselves.
Brulette says the tribe applied years ago to put land, including the Chilkoot Estates subdivision and other small parcels, into trust. But she says the Chilkoot tribe is different than the other plaintiffs in the lawsuit, in that it doesn't have much land.
What was once our land is now a checkerboard of various ownerships that have nothing to do with the tribe.
Brulette says the court decision is a rare positive event after many losses for the tribe.
It's been a struggle to maintain ourselves as a sovereign tribe. You know, our tribe is small because our community became a predominantly a non-native community. I mean, we were about 18% of the population. It's been a struggle, you know, to maintain ourselves like a tribe. And I think this is an opportunity for us, and it's not just an opportunity for us, but I think it's going to benefit the community as well. It will give us some freedom, although, you know, we don't have a lot of land, it's still a little bit of freedom.
Brulette says the status they hope to gain for their remaining property would give the tribe authority over taxes and could allow for economic development opportunities. Because the Chilkoot Indian Association's land is limited, she says the land into trust decision's symbolic importance may outweigh the practical changes the future holds. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
District 36 Representative Dan Ortez held a constituents meeting in Ketchikan last week. He spoke about the state's fiscal challenge and what happened during the last legislative session. KRBD's Maria Dudzak attended and has this story.
Ortez says he knew it would be tough entering the regular session with a $3.5 billion budget deficit. He says though little progress was made, some positive things were accomplished for District 36. Ortez says one positive was a failed attempt to withhold cruise ship passenger funds from Southeast communities.
That's pretty significant to the budgets of our city and the budgets of our borough in terms of about $4 million total and $2 million each for the city and for the borough. So in the end, I was quite concerned about it, and obviously people from the borough were quite concerned about that particular issue, and we were able to get that reversed and able to secure those monies.
He says he also supported a bill to help free up regulations on state timberlands.
Senate Bill 32 was a success because it made it more, again, made timber more accessible, and it made the timber industry more viable here in Southeast Alaska, and the economy overall wins when that happens.
Ortez says while increased access to state lands is beneficial, the larger issue for timber and mining industries is access to federal lands. His top priorities are senior programs, public safety, and education, and he's pleased some funding was restored for those services. Governor Bill Walker called a special legislative session earlier this month to address the state budget crisis, specifically to identify new sources of revenue. The current budget relies on using savings alone from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. With decline in oil revenue and production, the capital and operating budget went from $8 billion to less than $4 billion after the governor's vetoes. Walker has proposed restructuring the permanent fund and adding a combination of new taxes. Ortez says legislators can't tap into the fund's main savings without voter approval, but they can use the earnings from the investments. He says he hears constituents say, don't touch the permanent fund, but they also don't want to see a reduction in services.
Right now, we could pay the dividend the way it's always been paid for two more years, but then after that, we're going to be out of savings, and the only source of money that we're going to have to fund the government is going to be the permanent fund earnings, which is what pays your dividend.
Ortiz says he supports a combination of measures.
To me, what would be more fair would be a combination of some income tax and a cap on the dividend so that we continue to get the dividend, but not a complete reduction of the dividend. I would think that would be a pretty regressive move and have the biggest impact on the less fortunate people.
He says if the legislature doesn't come up with a solution, the state eventually will run out of money. Ortiz believes lawmakers can reach a consensus. He says the issue isn't that the two sides can't come to a compromise, it's that some are unwilling.
The issue is some people believe they're just not willing to restructure the permanent fund. I think that they believe that that is not in, they believe that that's not in anybody's best interest, and particularly their best interest in terms of if they want to continue to be in the legislature.
Ortiz says legislators should be held accountable for their actions.
Our job is to make sure that we're on a fiscally sustainable path into the future. That's our job. So I'm very much willing to take the actions to make that happen. But so far, there's some of us, but we're in the minority so far.
He says the long-term solution is diversifying so the state doesn't rely solely on the oil industry for revenue. Ortiz says timber, fishing, and mining offer economic opportunities, but expanding those industries will take time.
We have great long-term potential, but what we need to do is figure out how to get to the long-term here in the short and mid-term, you know, how to bridge us to that potential area.
Ortiz says there are currently no plans for another special session. He says if one is called, it likely will be after the November elections. In Ketchikan, I'm Maria Dudzak.
And I'm Angela Dunning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.